you in the 06010.
Fantasy Focus Football is presented by Geico. Insurance can be hard. That's why Geico makes it easy with 24/7 claim support and on-the-go policy info in the app. It's easy to Geico. Happy Thursday, final day of November, the first night of action for Week 13 NFL season. And we, my friends, have a special guest. The man, the myth, the legend. You may know him as the host of ESPN Bet Live, right? Recently rebranded. Mm-hmm. Wonderful show. It's making all kinds of waves in the world of sports betting and just sports media in general. You may know him as Mike Clay's arch nemesis. You may know him as Food Network contestant on Guy's Grocery right. Games. Tyler Fulgham is in the building. What's going on?
Tremendous introduction, Field. You have made me blush here, which is hard to do given my complexion. But yeah, all those things are true. Yes. Happy to be here now in Connecticut, even though I had to leave Las Vegas to host ESPN Bet Live and be on campus with you and the rest of the gang here. And yeah, it was a great run on Guy's Grocery Games. Just fell a little bit short of graduating to senior year and a chance at 35K.
I know. That happened last night. For those that may have missed it, go watch the episode. Yeah. I told Tyler when I walked in this morning, I said, Tyler, I know you're my friend. I know that I'm biased, but you got screwed.
Yeah.
So if the judges are out there listening right now, if Guy is watching this,
come on.
Tyler got screwed. Redemption. You know, they often do, though, like those redemption tour type shows on Food Network. So you can be like the best of, right? Chop is big on that. Like, you know, the contestants that almost got there but didn't quite win, that could be you one day.
That's what I'm hoping for. And Guy said, you know, hopefully this isn't the last time we see each other. And hopefully, Guy, it's not the last time, because I'd love to come back and compete again against some other home chefs for a shot.
That's an interesting question, actually, though. Do you think Guy was saying, like, he wants you to one day compete on Food Network again? Or this guy has sports betting insight. He wants to be on ESPN Bet Live one day in Bristol.
I'll invite him. He's certainly welcome to join ESPN Bet Live anytime he wants. I know Guy is a huge fan of Bay Area teams. Yeah. He goes to a lot of Warriors games. Even though the Raiders are in Vegas, he's still a Raiders fan.
Yeah,
so, Guy, if you want some wagering advice on your beloved Warriors, who right now are struggling a little bit.
Yeah, bet against them. How's
exactly.
that?
Exactly. Yeah. Or your Raiders, who, after making the change to Antonio Pierce as head coach, have been a little more frisky, especially from a fantasy perspective with guys like Josh Jacobs.
Let me ask you this. What are the chances the guy has some influence on who the Raiders make their full-time head coach next?
I will say this. It's possible Guy Fieri has more money than Mark Davis, more cash available than Mark. So he might have more influence if he wants to get a piece of the Raiders at this point. Guy is a very wealthy man. So maybe Mark should call Guy and say, hey, if you'd like a little bit of an ownership stake and some say in personnel, here you go.
Say, you're richer than Brady, and Brady got a piece of the pie, so come on in. I remember when Guy recently re-upped his deal with Food Network, and it was one of those things that in the version of Twitter that I still think back upon fondly, which I thought was like just a fun, like, you know, there's always going to be some negativity on social media. I thought it was just like this fun, amicable place for the most part. When his news broke about how much he makes per year, it was just one of those things where it was like no one was dunking on Guy. Everybody was just like, oh my God, what a legend this man is for all he has accomplished at Food Network. And as somebody who watches a lot of Guy's Grocery Games and, of course, Triple D, I can tell you he's probably worth that coin. Tyler, not just a betting analyst, of course, and host. Also, if you guys watch Fantasy Football Now on Sunday mornings, you know that he has plenty of fantasy insights. So we said, going to the bullpen, baby. We got Tyler Fulgham here. So we're going to do, as we always do on Thursdays, a preview of the game tonight.
Okay.
Plus, the first half of our Week 13 full preview. A little bit of a lighter week this week with six teams on a bye. Just two more byes to go after this week. Commanders and Cardinals next week. But we got to get through this last six-week bye. As I will say, every time the NFL has six teams on a bye, don't do it. Four teams max. I truly believe that the NFL is not mindful enough of the fantasy community during these six teams on a bye week.
And it would be wise to be as mindful of the fantasy and wagering community, because that is what is going to drive engagement with the NFL going forward.
Right.
The fact that we can wager, the fact that we play fantasy.
Yeah.
Roger Goodell, all the owners.
You're allowed to be here. You're allowed to be here whenever you want, by the way. We're going to start with...
I think it's a big upgrade from Mike Clay. Yeah. I just... just saying.
I got a few texts already that were like, so Clay.
Love you, Michael.
Can this happen forever? Thursday Night Football, we got the Seahawks against the Cowboys. The Seahawks are wearing their throwback uniforms tonight, which does make me a little bit excited. I'm not going to lie.
Those are choice.
They are excellent.
Those are elite.
Yeah, you are a Rams fan. Yeah. You can admit as much as well. And by the way, Tyler, you have a vested interest in this game because your Rams are just one game back of these Seahawks. So you're probably rooting for the Cowboys tonight. But let's dive into it from a fantasy perspective. If you have any of Dak Prescott or CeeDee Lamb or Tony Pollard, you were starting those players because Dak is the hottest player in fantasy right now. CeeDee Lamb not too far behind amongst wide receivers. But there's one last question for the Cowboys. You know, you do a lot of daily fantasy as well, so you can always kind of find these value plays here. Jake Ferguson, though, from a season-long perspective, does he tickle your fancy at all here?
Yeah, I do like Jake Ferguson. We know tight ends, kind of a barren wasteland. Although this year is much better than years past.
A little better, yeah.
We have more depth at the position. It's not just Travis Kelce, Mark Andrews, and then nothing. But Jake Ferguson has been productive. He's going through a little bit of a slump right now. But I love this environment for the Cowboys offense. I expect Dak to keep cooking. Yep. I think they're going to score, 25 to 31 points, somewhere in that range. And if that's what I'm expecting from an offense, getting a tight end who is a part of that and who has shown he can earn 5, 7, 8 targets, I think is worth starting this week.
So I had this in my notes written down. I had 5 or more targets, 3 of his past 5 games. He has a touchdown in 3 of his past 5 games, but back-to-back games without a score. But the most important note that I had is that Ferguson, who's my tight end 8 for this week, plays with Dak Prescott. Yeah. Like, that's the most important. I mean, between Brandon Cooks and Jake Ferguson and the guys who are not named CeeDee Lamb, who also catch passes, like, the possibility exists, right? With the way that Dak is performing right now, you kind of want as much of this Cowboys offense 100%. When a player has a defined role like Jake Ferguson does. He's my tight end 8 for this week. But everything gets more complicated on the Seattle side.
Oh, yeah.
So the team announced yesterday that Kenneth Walker III is doubtful to play. I was going to say that means he's out, but as we learned last week with Max Crosby and Darius Slayton, two guys who were doubtful, there had been 67 players that were listed as doubtful going into last week. All of them missed the game.
That's crazy.
And then two played this past week. I'm going to count on Kenneth Walker III not playing.
Yeah,
for the purposes of this analysis, have you seen enough from Zach Charbonnet, who not just over the past couple weeks, but you being a West Coast guy, probably saw some of him during his years at UCLA.
Yeah, I think Charbonnet is a really good player. I think he, unfortunately, last week and this week is going to be undone by bad matchup and bad offensive environment. And what I mean by that is Geno Smith, to me, clearly doesn't look 100%. He took that hit against the Rams and Aaron Donald, came back at the end of that game and then played last week, but it's not the Geno Smith we saw last year, certainly. And this offense as a whole this season has kind of been, kind of stuck in neutral a little bit.
All year.
DK has had some up and downs. Tyler Lockett's been hurt. Kenneth Walker's been in and out of the lineup. Injuries on the offensive line. So I do not trust them in this environment because the Dallas Cowboys have a defense that's on par with the San Francisco 49ers, and I think they can make life very difficult for everyone, Charbonnet included.
Yeah, so I've got him as RB18 this week, and I'm going to say this 50 times on the show, so I apologize in advance. 6 teams on a bye, right? Mm-hmm. So you've got players that were normally starting that are not available because of the bye weeks. Josh Jacobs amongst the running backs that are not available this week. Here is the good thing that Zach Charbonnet has going for him right now is that it's his show in the backfield. This is a stat courtesy of our good friend, John Daigle. Since Kenneth Walker III got hurt, Zach Charbonnet has handled 29 of their 32 running back carries. That's good. They're 10 of their 12 running back targets and a 15.1% target share, right? So like
healthy.
Those boxes that have been checked are all good enough that he's going to hang on to some value, but the possibility exists of a game like last week when they got smoked by the 49ers, in which he was just fine. Nothing special.
In PPR, I think he's got an opportunity to get there because he could earn those 5 or 6 targets. And I expect Geno Smith to be under pressure and need to dump the ball off. Yeah. And if he has 4 or 5 catches and turns that into 40, 50 yards and maybe stumbles into a touchdown, he's just not going to win you this week, I don't think. You're going to need him to catch a lot of footballs in PPR and standard scoring. He's going to struggle, I think, in this matchup.
And you've already kind of highlighted some of the concerns for Geno tonight. But man, like, I don't know how many people, I'd be genuinely curious, in a 10 or 12 team league, how many people are still hanging on to Geno as their starting quarterback? My guess would be very few, other than people who play in a league in which everybody drafts a backup and they just couldn't find a trade to upgrade from Geno. But he has under 14 fantasy points in 3 of his past 4 games. He has under 10 fantasy points in 2 of his last 4 games. And how about this? He's actually on pace for more than 10 fewer passing touchdowns this year than last year. He's on pace for under 20 passing touchdowns. I don't think Geno has regressed as a player. I think this offense, I almost feel like what happened last year is that sort of like best case scenario, like the top simulation, if you run it 100 times, hit last year.
Yeah, I agree with
you. And now we kind of like sort of regressed back to the mean, to borrow a Mike Clay idea. And he just is, he's not startable in fantasy. Against the Cowboys, good luck.
100% agree with that. Yeah. The Cowboys at home, especially, are just a disgusting matchup for opposing offenses, quarterbacks, running backs, wide receivers. Everyone struggles against Dallas at home. They're 5-0 at home, 5-0 against the spread. Their average margin of victory is 29 points.
29.
They're covering by an average of 18 points per game. I mean, they're just blowing out the opposition. It is absolutely absurd.
That is so, man, what a
do not like Seahawks options at all.
Does that apply to the wide receivers? Like, do you feel any more confidence or responsibility? Voted to play them?
I mean, if you have DK Metcalf, you're starting him. Likely you don't have a better option. Tyler Lockett is probably a similar scenario. If I have Jackson Smith and Jigba in my flex, I'd probably try and find something else. Again, you're hoping that Dallas gets up by a couple touchdowns early and Geno just on sheer volume has to throw because efficiency is not going to be there.
Yeah.
It's not going to be there against this team. So on sheer volume, maybe he connects in the fourth quarter with Lockett or Metcalf, but you know, there's way better offenses to attach yourself to this week than the Seattle Seahawks in Dallas against that defense.
There's this weird thing that we do in fantasy football. It's very human, is that like you attach name value to the player and his fantasy value, whether you should or should not. Mm-hmm. But you, as the fantasy manager, if you sit DK Metcalf and he finds his way to four catches for 100 yards and a touchdown tonight, that would sting you much more than, and I'm just making a totally random scenario up. If you say, you know what, I'm going to play Zay Jones over DK Metcalf, and Zay, who's obviously been very quiet, goes for, you know, 5 for 67 and a touchdown on Monday night. Like, if you do the inverse, right? 100%. If you play DK Metcalf with Zay Jones on your bench, it stings, but it doesn't sting the way that if you sit DK Metcalf and he goes off stings. And that's the case with both DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett. Let's put some numbers to it just for some perspective on how bad they have been. All right, so not bad, but just how meh they have been.
Mid.
So DK does have two top 15 finishes in his past 3 weeks, but the variance is so wild. He has one game this year, one with 100 or more receiving yards, and he has one game with over 7 catches. So if he doesn't have a big play and a touchdown, it's hard to count on DK Metcalf. Now, he's also 6'4", 225 pounds. Runs like the wind. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure how many players are a better bet for a big play than DK.
And I'm going to give him an aesthetic boost with the uniforms tonight when DK comes off the bus in that Seattle throwback looking 6'4", 225, Vaseline baby oil, you know, like maybe he runs a 4.2 tonight.
Yeah,
so.
Do you want to tell him you're sitting him? Because I don't. And with Lockett, you know, sort of same deal. Like, I think with Lockett, the thing about Tyler Lockett that I think maybe makes it a little bit easier to just, like, continue to play him is that this is who he's been forever, right? But he has 39 targets over his past 5 games. That's almost 8 a game. That's a pretty good number, right? But he has no 100-yard games this season. Tyler Lockett, inconsistent this year, as he has been for many years in the past. I have both of these guys. Here's where I have him ranked. I have Lockett as wide receiver 18, DK at wide receiver 12.
Okay.
Say it again, second mention. 6 teams on a bye, and a lot of wide receivers not available this week. The likes of which include, obviously no Vikings at all, no DJ Moore. There is no Devontae Adams, amongst several other teams that are on a bye this week. You want to pick this one? I think I know which way you're going.
Yeah, I mean, the Cowboys.
Big.
Absolutely. Yeah, they win, they cover. I'm going to talk about it on ESPN Bet Live later tonight, but this is an offense I expect to score 30-plus points. I see struggles for Seattle, so when Dallas has taken on teams like this that they're superior to in terms of talent, they've smashed them this year. They've absolutely smashed them. I don't see any reason to stop tonight.
You know what's funny is, like, this is how you know your brain's getting a little bit too sick right now as a fantasy football manager, is I've got Brandon Aubrey as the Cowboys kicker on at least one of my teams.
Right.
And, you know, he's not missed a field goal this season. It's been this amazing story, right? So you're like, oh, that's good. The problem is they don't kick field goals anymore. Like, every week it's like, yeah, he had 4 points or 5 points because they scored 35
one
points,
field goal,
right?
So,
like,
and 4 extra points.
So here's what I'm asking for Seattle. A little bit of resistance tonight. You know, I need Dak. I have Dak on a couple of rosters. I really need him in my life as well. Mm-hmm. But, like, how about four touchdowns and two field goals, like preferably like 52
yarder.
Yeah, that seems reasonable to me. Is that asking too much?
I don't don't think so.
I would agree on that. All right. Coming back in just a moment to preview the rest of week 13. But first, a word from our friends over at Geico. They want to know, are you overwhelmed by insurance? Make it easy. Get all your insurance in one place with Geico. Plus, get 24/7 claim support and on-the-go policy access with the award-winning Geico mobile app. See how easy insurance can be and go to geico.com. All right, time now for our Week 13 preview, Part 1. Tyler Foljam in the building, ESPN Bet Live host, and just an all-around swell gentleman, soon to be Connecticut resident as well.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's official now. I'm here.
I have
my place that will be available later in December, but I left Las Vegas last night for the final time. I am now a Connecticut resident.
I cannot look.
The Nutmeg State, right?
The Nutmeg State, that's correct. Yes. I think that's correct. Yeah, that's correct. Okay. That definitely is correct. What's the emotion like leaving from Vegas without getting, you don't have
Fair
to
sweet.
Get, okay.
You know, it's obviously a great opportunity for me to be here with Field on campus here, see Boomer, see Adam Schefter on Sundays watching football games. That's a lot of fun. So that's great. But my golf game's going to suffer.
Okay. Yeah, it is. Yeah,
I could play year round in Las Vegas. Yeah. The food options, the entertainment options, a little more abundant there.
Yeah, I would say so.
Here, just a little more abundant. So those are some things that are going to take an adjustment.
Yeah, they will. But I will say the silver lining: food scene way better here than I was told.
I've had some good meals already.
So you have to go head over to West Hartford Center, mosey around there.
Yeah, we'll do that.
The problem is you might get hired by one of those restaurants, which would be good. We also are going to take advantage of the fact that you are an A-plus chef. Hopefully one day on Fantasy Focus we can actually cook
a
meal.
I'll cater Fantasy FF now on a Sunday morning.
I know, that would be more appropriate.
Bring my signature breakfast sandwich.
What is it?
We got candied bacon with brown sugar and black pepper, avocado, cilantro, over medium egg, pickled shallot or Fresno chilies, English muffin, and some Cholula. Hot sauce is my favorite.
Okay, I love Cholula as well. Yeah. That sounds amazing. Now, the only question I have, and I'm not trying to be ridiculous here, but like, how do you wake up in the morning and not, like, that must take some time, right?
It does. It takes commitment and time, but you know, all good things that are worth it, you know, are worth the wait, kind
That's a good point,
And you can prep things ahead, you know.
Okay, all right. Efficient. And maybe it's because I have two young children now. Like my cooking is extremely basic these days. Like if I'm lucky, like if I'm going fancy, it's like I toast a bagel in the morning. Usually it's just like coffee and whatever I can scour together. So one day I will get back into cooking. Well, but for now, I am
Mr. Basic.
A reasonable
excuse not to be able to cook as much as I do. No kiddos.
They are crazy, but they are the best. You are a Rams fan,
yes,
you're from St. Louis originally, so you have followed the Rams too. They followed you actually to the West Coast.
Exactly.
Did it bother you when they left? Like, were you like?
Yeah, it did bother me the way that it went down, but I completely understood the reasonings because the value of the franchise just by putting Los Angeles in front of it instead of St. Louis went from $900 million, to $5 billion for St.
Also crazy.
So I understood that.
Kronky, pretty much everything he touches turns to gold these days, right?
Don't say that in Avalanche. St. Louis.
I know. I know. I'm sorry, but it's like Avalanche, Nuggets, Rams.
Right.
One of his soccer teams too, right?
Arsenal. He has the Arsenal soccer team across the pond.
Yeah.
I think a lacrosse team.
He does
in
the Mammoth,
Colorado.
The Denver Mammoth, and Colorado Mammoth. Excuse me. They won the. They won the championship.
It's been a good run for the Kroenke
NLL
family.
2 years ago. Yeah.
Much to the chagrin of the 314 and the 6-3-6. I still love you.
Yeah, of course you do. So you're a Rams fan, and you can help us here. Because sometimes I think I'm one of those people that believes that like people, like there are some journalists who cover the team that they grew up rooting for and like have no shame in admitting they're a fan. It's like that's ridiculous. Those people can't be level-headed and even about it. They're going to be biased. They're going to root for the guys. Like they're going to be homers. And I think sometimes the people that root for the players are actually like more down the middle because they just call it how they see it because they're going to stick with these players no matter, like they're going to stick with the franchise no matter what, but like they ride so much of the emotional wave that they just have no choice but to get it off their chest. I think the perfect part about fantasy is it doesn't matter. Like you don't have to be emotional about your team because you don't necessarily have those players on your roster. But Cooper Kupp is one of those guys that's hard to ignore in fantasy, as is Puka Nacua, the rookie sensation. But they have been quiet over the past 2 weeks. And now they draw the Cleveland Browns.
Right.
Can you make the case for Cooper Kupp and Puka Nacua, or are you more inclined to make the case against them?
I'm more inclined to make the case against them, unfortunately.
I hear you.
I think when you are a fan of a team, the bias is there, but information, I don't read every single beat reporter for, you know, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Right.
I do that for the Rams. I get all the information on the Rams because that's the team I care about. So I know what's kind of going on underneath these surface stats with this team. And Cooper Kupp is probably not 100%. We saw him tweak that ankle again against Arizona. Puka Nacua has been great, but Matthew Stafford also dealing with a little bit of a thumb issue. And the offensive line has finally started to get healthy again. What that has done, though, with Kyren Williams now returning, has opened up this offense now to be far less concentrated than it was a year ago. Yeah. Last year, it was Cooper Kupp, and that was all they had. Now they have Kyren Williams. Tutu Atwell has emerged. Puka Nacua is a good compliment, which Allen Robinson was not last year.
Nope.
So this is just a confluence of things that have made Cooper Kupp, along with the injuries, far less effective from a fantasy perspective than he was the last couple of years.
All right, so I'm going to try to do this. So I have Cooper Kupp ranked as wide receiver 28 this week.
Okay.
Puka Nacua just one spot behind him, wide receiver 29. That implicitly suggests like not a ton of confidence for
wide
two guys.
That
would be like 20 spots lower than where I have them as recently as a week ago. What I'm going to try to do, and perhaps for selfish purposes, but because there are a lot of people out there that I do think are struggling with the idea of, can I really play Cooper Kupp? Let's try to figure out the path in which he can have a bounce back week. And, and a lot of this logic applies for Puka Nacua as well. Although I feel like with Puka, you've gotten gravy this year because of how great he has been above expectation, that it's a little bit less frustrating as compared to Cooper Kupp, because before the injury, if you drafted before the injury in the preseason, he might have been, I don't know, the third pick off your draft board, fifth pick off your draft board. Let's talk through it, though, because Cooper Kupp, on the downside, has six combined targets over the past 2 weeks. He got hurt in one of those games, right? Didn't play for like about 60% of that game.
Right.
Last week, the Rams game got in a hand about a quarter into it. Kyren Williams and the ground game just absolutely
Tyler Higbee.
Higbee had two touchdowns. Yeah. Williams had two receiving touchdowns as well. So if I'm trying to like engineer the case for Cooper Kupp, it's this. It's that it's not going to be as easy on the ground every single week as it was last week. He is fully practicing once again. He practiced in full yesterday. So I think the health is still a thing, but it's not going to limit his availability. Every single dropback that they threw a pass last week, Cooper Kupp ran around.
He's out there.
100% round participation. They may have to throw it a bit more, even in a terrible matchup against the Browns, who, of course, have allowed the second fewest fantasy points to opposing receivers. Maybe, though, the thing that I am going to default to and hope for the most is that Sean McVay is very aware of his players and just sort of like the narrative surrounding the players during every week of the season.
Right.
Remember when Cooper Kupp came back from the injury in that very first game back? First drive, he had five catches. That was against Pittsburgh?
Philly. I think it was Philly.
Philly. Five catches on the first drive. Yeah. Now, I get it. Philly is a much different pass defense than the Browns are, but still, to me, that was a very concerted effort by Sean McVay to get Cooper Kupp involved. Now, the Rams are more focused in on staying very much alive in the NFC wildcard battle right now, but if you told me that Sean McVay thought to himself this week, I got to get those two guys going a little bit right now, and especially Cooper, the guy who is a former Super Bowl MVP offensive player of the year just two seasons ago, wouldn't totally surprise me.
Wouldn't surprise me either.
I'm trying to engineer this right now.
And that's the, I like workshopping field. I like anytime we can workshop and just try and understand, no matter which side you're on, how does it play out if you go this way? How does it play out if you go this way? I am on the other side where I think because Cooper Kupp and Puka Nacua are such selfless wide receivers, they are not the typical diva.
They are not.
Cooper Kupp is not going to Sean McVay and say, I need the rock.
Yeah.
Cooper Kupp is worried about winning football games, and right now they're doing that. Cooper Kupp also knows that the Cleveland Browns may have the best pass defense in the entire NFL.
Yes.
Myles Garrett looks like he might is trending towards availability.
Yeah.
So I think Sean McVay is going to lean heavily on a rushing attack that now has its catalyst back in Kyren Williams, and the offensive line is gaining confidence through that. Again, Stafford dealing with the thumb a little bit as well.
Yeah.
I do not think we're going to, this has a low total under 40. It's like 39.5. It's expected to be a low scoring game. I don't see as many dropbacks in this game for Matthew Stafford as other matchups, and that is what concerns me about both Cooper Kupp and Puka Nacua.
Feel you on that. What I'm hoping for with Cooper is that, like, I don't expect a 10 for 120 in a touchdown game, but I'm hoping that Sean McVay says, let's avoid the 3 for 12 game that he had last week. Like, can we get this guy 5 or 6 catches for 60 yards on Sunday? Maybe an end zone target as well. That, to me, would be a big win if you are a Cooper Kupp manager. other side of the game, Amari Cooper, who himself is banged up. He's got this shoulder injury that popped up last week. Right now, the Browns have not named a starter for Sunday, but they have noted that Joe Flacco is the number two, which means that if Dorian Thompson-Robinson can't clear concussion protocol by Sunday, which would be a fairly quick turnaround, Joe Flacco show is back, baby. The Browns definitely get better hair under center with that elite lettuce of Joe Burrow. But do you have any confidence in Amari Cooper this week?
If Joe Flacco is playing, Amari Cooper is the number one wide receiver in this game. It's not Cooper Kupp. It's not Puka Nacua. I think
spicy.
Amari Cooper goes off for close to 100 yards, if not that, in a touchdown with Joe Flacco.
All right.
Let's go back to last year when Joe Flacco was quarterbacking the New York Jets week 1-3.
Yeah.
The alpha receiver, I think he recognized immediately, was Garrett Wilson.
Right.
Weeks 1-3 of Garrett Wilson's career, he got 33 targets, 11 per game from Joe Flacco.
Okay.
Flacco will feed the football to whoever his best wide receiver is.
Yeah.
And I think he knows that is Amari Cooper.
God, I love that logic because it's been tough for Amari Cooper recently. How about this? In two games since Deshaun Watson got hurt, he's got six catches for 50 yards.
David Njoku and Elijah Moore are taking all the targets, at or near the line of scrimmage. Joe Flacco will push the football down the field.
Njoku over the past months is over nine targets per game. The guy
wild.
Is getting all hit 15 targets in a game
that
recently. It's crazy. So you're hoping that like a little bit more of driving the football down the field follows for a guy in Joe Flacco who, whatever he can't do anymore, he still can throw the football.
Yes, he can.
Plenty far. So I've got Amari Cooper though right now is wide receiver 40. And if Flacco is available, he'll go up probably a handful
like
of spots because right now the passing offense is borderline non-functional with DTR. I'd be surprised, truthfully, if DTR is available on Sunday.
That's the read I'm getting. I feel like it's trending towards Flacco. And I feel like if you're a Browns fan for this matchup against the Rams on the road in a dome, I think that's what you want. I think the cornerbacks that the Rams have, mediocre young players.
Yep.
Amari Cooper should be able to win those matchups, and I think he can get accessed by Joe Flacco better than DTR.
We have not been talking about particularly prolific passing offenses so far today, so let's keep it rolling.
Okay.
With the Carolina Panthers, baby, they have a new offensive coordinator. They have a new head coach, I should say, as they fired Frank Reich after 11 games, second shortest tenure in NFL history by a head coach. We go back to Thomas Brown calling plays. He called the plays briefly, and then Frank took that responsibility back. The whole thing is a mess right now in Carolina. Do you believe that Adam Thielen has fallen off the tracks, or is that volume just too good to ignore?
I think the volume at the beginning of the season was the upper 5% outcome.
Yeah.
I don't think that's something we can rely on the rest of the way.
Yep.
But I do think he is still going to be the guy that Bryce Young looks at, 8 to 10 times in this matchup. And we know that in this matchup, this is a team that you can throw the football on. Okay, I trust them to be able to throw the football against Tampa Bay because that's they've allowed 8 receivers to go for 100 or more yards this season. You don't run on Tampa Bay, you throw on them. They are a pass funnel. And I think Tampa Bay might be leading. So a negative game script forces Carolina to throw to catch up.
I'm with you there. By the way, this is one where, like, because Thomas Brown has already called plays, and truthfully, like, because I think this offense in Carolina is pretty much helpless, I don't think much changes with the head coaching / other staff changes this week. Like, I think it's pretty much status quo from what it has been. I think people are a little bit overreacting to last week with Adam Thielen, in which he had just 3 targets. In 4 of his past 5 games prior to that, he had at least 10 targets a game. Thielen has been so busy this year, and the possibility of a big play is pretty limited with Adam Thielen. That being said, like, if he gets you 9 targets in a game, there's a pretty reasonable chance for those of us that are PPR fiends. He turns that into 6 catches for 65 yards. That's
and he's
fine.
He's a red zone and end zone savant. The guy is
has been forever.
Going back to his days in Minnesota, he earns the most valuable targets, those inside the 10-yard line in the red zone. Whatever he does with his route running, his just understanding of the defensive concepts, he is brilliant at earning targets in the end zone. He doesn't need a 40-yard touchdown. He scores those 6, 7, 8-yard touchdowns all the time.
I was listening to a podcast, and they mentioned the idea, like, we should do a show sometime of our best and worst takes of all time. I was thinking about that, and I don't know. I feel like I don't personally love reliving your best takes. I sort of think, like, implied in the job is try to provide entertainment and analysis. But worst takes, you can have some fun with those. And mine, and there are a lot to choose from, don't get me wrong, but one of my all-time worst had to have been Adam Thielen, who came out of nowhere and had this monster game. Like, I'm talking, like, 12 catches and 2 touchdowns. Prior to that, he had, like, 10 total catches in his career. And I'm like, my analysis after this, you know, this is the, this obviously this is the best game that Adam Thielen will ever have in his career. And then it was like, from there, he became like an all-pro receiver, like every single season. So my apologies to Adam. Hopefully he's forgiven me, because I'm sure he listens to the show daily about that bad take I had. But you're right. That Bucs pass defense, right? They've allowed the second most receiving yards to wide receivers this season. We see it every single week. Michael Pittman went off last week. Yep. Josh Downs had 13 targets in that game. And especially if the Buccaneers are doing to the Panthers what the Colts were doing. That was a game in which the Colts were leading for much of it, right? Yep. So if the Panthers are up big, which we anticipate, I do expect him to be busy. Jonathan Mingo is sort of trending up. I want to mention this name. I don't think people playing in 10 or 12 team leagues are going to be bothering themselves with Jonathan Mingo. And I think he's still a work in progress as a player. Have you seen the clip that went around social media this week? Like Mingo, it was like Bryce Young was like dashing to his right. Mm-hmm. Mingo was also running to the right, and it was like, you know, a sideline pass where like Mingo, rather than just like stopping and catching the ball, like he kept running and had to like leap back. And next thing you know, like his body is inbound, but his feet are out of bounds. And you're just like, you made that so much harder on yourself than it needed to be. But he does have a little bit of momentum with six or more targets in each of the past 3 weeks. And he actually led the team in receptions last week. So, We talked about this a little bit earlier in the week about waiver strategy. If you are in a spot where you have flexible bench spots now, because either you don't want to carry two quarterbacks, you don't want to carry two tight ends, and your star has already had his bye, Mingo's not a terrible name to keep in mind.
Agreed.
Just in case
this
continues, and just in case I'm wrong, and this coordinator, not coordinator, but this play caller change does make a difference for this Carolina offense. Plus, they play a lot of NFC South teams down the stretch. They could maybe possibly find a little bit of momentum here.
I think this is as good a spot as Mingo's going to see all season. And for those who want to try and win, you know, $1 million playing daily fantasy, Mingo and DJ Shark are almost the stone cold minimum on DraftKings. And those are the type of low ownership plays that could pop off. I'm not saying for 25 points, but if they give you 16, 17, 18 could be a difference maker in your tournament lineups.
And we mentioned earlier, you mentioned earlier how the Bucs are a pass funnel.
Oh my gosh.
So you're avoiding Chuba Hubbard.
Yeah, absolutely. Avoiding Chuba Hubbard. Miles Sanders obviously hasn't been anything at all this season, and Sanders siphoned some touches last week that were a bit concerning, but it's still Hubbard's backfield in terms of snap share, things like that. But I'm avoiding running backs against Tampa Bay, loading up on pass catchers.
As am I. I have Hubbard as RB27, which, third time. Again, it's going to get to 50 by the end of the show. 16 on a bye, he's still only RB27. Let's talk about the Texans here and the running backs to start specifically. I would have told you coming into the season that Damian Pierce is clearly a better overall prospect than Devin Singletary.
Yep.
I would have been wrong, because it sure seems like the Texans have identified Devin Singletary as the much superior player. When Devin Singletary was running by himself with no Damian Pierce, he was going off. Like, he was a top 15 running back.
Absolutely.
Now that Damian Pierce is back, the value has decreased for Devin Singletary. But if you had your druthers to choose between one of these two backs, is it as clear to you as it is to me which one you want?
Yeah, it's Singletary. Pierce only played 18% of the snaps last 18? Week. I expect that to increase, but I don't think he's going to jump from 18 to 60.
Yep.
And Singletary has pass game chops.
Yep,
he has been great in the red zone, converting. This is a game that has one of the higher totals with Denver coming into Houston. It's going to be playing in a dome environment. There's going to be offense in this game, so much rather have Singletary in a RB2 or flex spot than Damian Pierce.
And worth noting that Denver, one of the worst defenses in the NFL against opposing running backs, as Mike has been talking. You know, they've obviously been a lot better in defending the pass after that 70-point outburst by the Dolphins. I think the reason why these guys are more closely clustered together in rankings than you might expect based off of our analysis of the first 2 minutes of this conversation is that, one, you pointed out, Damian Pierce is not going to play 18% of the snaps again. He's going to play more than that. It wouldn't surprise me if it's more like 35 to 40% of the snaps. Moreover, seven targets last week for Devin Singletary, while he's capable of pass catching, it is more of an outlier than what we have seen in prior years from him, because like when he was in place for Damian Pierce, he had like a 30 carry, zero target game.
Yeah.
Like it's just run the football. They just, can you blame them for wanting CJ Stroud to instead throw to the likes of Tank Dell and Nico Collins and even Noah Brown when he was healthy? Sounds like he'll be back this week, by the way. one of the big questions that people have is, what happened to Dalton Schultz? Yeah. Mike flagged this on Monday, and we learned something yesterday. Mike had noted that basically he was off the field for like the last like 14 passing attempts of the game. Nothing was mentioned in terms of an injury during the game, so it seemed, or at least the idea was floated, that maybe he was benched for Brevin Jordan. That was a hamstring injury, and he missed practice on Wednesday. So that explains that. I'll mention that to say that if Dalton Schultz plays on Sunday, unless we get some sort of reporting like, yeah, he's going to play, but he's going to be a very limited player. If he's playing on Sunday, I'll have him back inside my top 10 for tight ends because I thought Monday was like my alarm was up. It's a little bit less so now. Like the fact that we know why he was not playing, interesting and important, and tells me that if he's good to go, he will be what he has been for a recent chunk of this season, which is one of the more reliable tight ends in fantasy.
And I think, like we were talking about Jake Ferguson a little bit earlier, a couple of down performances. If he is healthy and gets his normal snap share, I am expecting a positive regression for someone like Dalton Schultz. Again, this is a great game environment. 47.5, I think, is the total. The Broncos have been abysmal against tight ends all season as well. This is as good a matchup as we have in the NFL if you're a tight end. And I expect there to be points in this game. I think both offenses are going to trade shots and trade scores. So having a piece of the Texans, I think, is valuable for this week.
And we mentioned earlier that you just want as much of people catching passes from Dak Prescott. That applies to C.J. Stroud. I can't wait for this one. A game that has real, important wild card implications in the AFC. I would not have guessed that about a month or so ago between these two players. Tyler is the DFS specialist here, but if Schultz is out, Brevin Jordan will be about as cheap as it gets at tight end, and could potentially, if he soaks up five targets from CJ Stroud at probably $3K, reasonable value there.
Absolutely. If Schultz is out, Jordan becomes maybe the chalk popular tight end. Absolutely. Totally.
Let's talk about the Bengals offense now, as we saw them for the first time for a full game without Joe Burrow last week. Before we talk about the fantasy, just like your expression right there was good for those that may admit, but just like a word to describe their offense last week. Or a sound like that. That's pretty good right there. Yeah. Uninspiring.
Yeah. Definitely. I mean, Jamar Chase, still incredible, catching those deflected passes. I know.
Two of his four catches were on deflections.
And then
it's like hilarious,
taking 130 yards extra after the catch. But it is clear that Jake Browning is a backup for a reason. Yeah. And we know this offense has struggled at times this year because Burrow was hurt, then T. Higgins got hurt, and it's just been a calamity for the Bengals all season long. Just a compounding issues, which, frankly, I mean, this team's playing back-to-back AFC title games. That's a lot of football they've played the last couple of years. Yeah. And it's not surprising to see them suffer some injuries, unfortunately, because they've played so much football.
Yeah, they have. They've really, I mean, it's like, reminds me of like these NBA teams that like they finish up their season in the NBA finals like June 22nd. And then it's like, training camp September 1. Right, you're like, what? A month off? Like, come on. Meanwhile, like, you know, the, I don't know, the Hornets are done like April 1st. Yeah, exactly. And they're like, I got like, you know, half the year off before I have to return. but I'm with you in just how uninspiring the offense was this past week. And I'm not sure that it gets a lot better for a few reasons. And I don't know if this is the only reason why or not. But given how poorly they ran the football last week against a good Pittsburgh defense, I wonder if Pittsburgh said, make Jake Browning beat us.
Sounds like smart coaching, Field.
To me, it would be very simple, right? Like, I'd rather go down because Jake Browning carves me 100%. For 275 100%. Yards and three touchdowns than, you know, the running game controls the clock and, you know, Joe Mixon goes for 125 and Jake Browning has, like, you know, two late game throws that do enough to seal the victory. So if I'm Jacksonville, same deal that I would be thinking this week. Joe Mixon had a total of 8 carries in week 12. So what does it mean for Jamar Chase? Let's start there. I still have Jamar Chase wide receiver 16 because this goes back to like the DK Metcalf thing, right? Like,
he's in your lineup. You're starting him and you're going to take what you get and shrug your shoulders. Hopefully it's good. Hopefully you get, you know, a surprising outcome from Jake Browning, but you're not putting Jamar Chase on your bench, even though there is little reason for optimism, despite his name being Jamar Chase.
Yeah, we're not far enough down the road with Jamar Chase and Jake Browning, where it's just been such a perpetual struggle that you're like, okay, crap, we have to do this. Like we're still like 2 or 3 bad games away from really having that conversation thoughtfully.
Well, the benefit,
maybe 1 or 2.
The benefit here, Field, is again expected game script. I think Jacksonville's a big favorite, 8 points, I believe.
Wow.
So if Jacksonville has a 24-10 halftime lead, it's a lot of Jake Browning dropbacks, whether they're efficient or not. probably not, but at least there's opportunity. So you could see 12 targets from Ja'Marr Chase just because that's necessitated out of the hole that they're in.
Yeah, and to the point of Joe Mixon and how we talked about how just how bad they were last week on the ground, he's fallen all the way to running back 17 this week. And again, fourth time, there's a lot of players on a bye this week at that running back spot. So for him to be that low tells you how much confidence I do not have in the Cincinnati offense. And the Jaguars, believe it or not, top five in terms of limiting opposing running backs and fantasy points this year. If the formula follows, make Jake Browning beat us. The thing is that last week you got a little bit of passing game utilization from Joe Mixon, but his passing game utilization is not going to pick up a ton of yards. No. It's all dump off city, right? So you're going to need five catches for 30 yards plus 45 yards rushing plus a touchdown for a big Joe Mixon day.
Terrible matchup because Jags have been objectively good against the run. And then I think you make a great point is that they're going to be even more focused on selling out to make Jake Browning beat them. So similar to kind of Charbonnet, I think you're just hoping in a game where they're probably going to get beat pretty handily, Mixon catches five or six passes out of the backfield because Browning's feeling pressure.
With one big run, and that's probably enough to get him to 14 fantasy points or something like that. Let's talk about the Commanders who play the Dolphins on Sunday. You're starting all your Dolphins. More thoughts on that tomorrow if need be, but Curtis Samuel went off on Thanksgiving. Nine catches for 100 yards. We've mostly talked about Curtis Samuel so far this year, Tyler, in the vein of the fact that he kind of blockades Jahan Dotson, which is a problem because we all liked Jahan Dotson a lot coming into this season. Are you buying the idea that Curtis Samuel could have another big game, or is that the one-off?
I'm more inclined to say that it's going to be an average Samuel game, which is like three or four catches for 30 to 40 yards and maybe a rush attempt or two. I don't think he's going to go for 9 and 100 like he did on Thanksgiving. But I heard from the boys over at Establish the Run, Adam Levitin, Evan Silva, that it is actually Samuel who has the highest target share per route run for this team.
Is that right?
Which is amazing. I mean, Sam Howell's dropping back a zillion times. He is throwing the football, but he is spreading it out.
Yeah.
McLaurin, Dotson, Logan Thomas, Samuel, the guys out of the backfield, whether it's Robinson or Antonio Gibson, like they are throwing the football. There's just so many options. You wish it was a little more condensed. And so Samuel's a guy who's going to operate near the line of scrimmage. Not a great matchup for him here. They will be playing from behind, but I think we're going to see him regress back to an average Samuel line this season.
That's, I think, the part that's most important when you mention they're going to play from behind. Because given the explosiveness of the Dolphins' offense and the Commanders' weak defense, which has been weakened since the trade deadline when they traded away both of their top pass rushers, this could be the, like, Tyree could have 28 points in the first half by himself, right? Like, it could be 31 to nothing at the half, and I would not be surprised at all. So you're kind of hoping, like, maybe Curtis Samuel and Jahan Dotson and, crazy enough, Terry McLaurin all get like eight targets apiece on Sunday because they're down so big. And while the Dolphins have tightened the screws against opposing wide receivers in recent weeks, I think it's worth noting that in the case of Miami, like one game against the Jets, like that's going to help your rating every time. But also like a game against Kansas City, the defense is going to be a little bit more up for that game than they might be in a game against the Commanders. And at that point, and maybe things have not totally changed, but at that point, the Chiefs were still a mess offensively.
And let's think about why that defense has gotten better for Miami. Hello, Jalen Ramsey.
That helps,
he's a guy who operates on the perimeter. Yep. So, and that's not where Curtis... That's affecting more Terry McLaurin. So, again, I think there's opportunity or there's a path here for Samuel to have another ceiling game. Playing from behind, Howell drops back 55 times, and he turns, you know, eight targets into six catches, maybe finds the end zone and has a few rushing attempts. But a 9 for 100, I think there's a 93% chance that's his highest output game of the season.
Oh, man. It also came against me in a league that I was just like, oh my God. I was just, it was one of those, it was like, I have so much to be thankful for, except for you, Curtis Samuel, on Thanksgiving, of course. Man, Brian Robinson, his teammate in the backfield, has been good this season. Actually, the fifth highest scoring running back. Now, he has a game in hand. He has not yet had his bye, but I don't know how many of us thought he would be a top five scoring running back in terms of total points at this juncture of the year. The problem with Brian Robinson is that with Antonio Gibson back, we had this thing that totally unlocked crazy upside for Brian Robinson for a couple of weeks. He was catching a million passes as well. He had six catches for 119 yards. If I told you coming into the year that Brian Robinson would have a 119-yard receiving game, but not have a game with more than 87 rushing yards, you'd think I'm nuts, right?
This was a guy all the money in my account.
Exactly, which is a lot of money, people. So what it means against Miami is that I'd love to have him inside my top 15. He's a top five scoring running back, but I have him as RB23, Tyler, for a few reasons. Antonio Gibson's presence.
Right.
And if this does go game script wise, like we expected to, is he going to carry the ball 8 times on Sunday?
That's well within the range of outcomes. And maybe even the most probable outcome is, you know, 11 or fewer carries. And you don't want that with Brian Robinson.
He did have last week on the opening drive against the Cowboys, I think he had 4.5 fantasy points, including 1 or 2 catches. So you're kind of hoping like you get a designed opportunity for him early when the game still is close. And like, he's a good player. He's a really good runner. It's just the scary part of Brian Robinson this week is the idea that Miami could be up big and that it could be more the Antonio Gibson show than it is the Brian Robinson show. Running back 23 for me, consensus ranks this week, running back 25 for B-Rob.
It was fun while it lasted.
It was. It was awesome. And maybe there might still be some meat on the bone there coming off the bye. We'll see. But Brian Robinson, a tougher matchup than you would hope for this week against Miami. Let's wrap things up here in terms of major topics for the Patriots and the Chargers, who play on Sunday in a game that it's going to have great uniforms.
We get the powder blues?
I think it's all white, but they're all white getup's pretty crispy.
And the Patriots are going red
jerseys. Okay, yeah. Well, that's an elite uniform. Matchup. Yeah, it could have been.
Chargers went powder blues.
That would be that would have been the best uniform matchup probably of the season if they went powder blues. Because I'm a sucker for pretty much all these throwback uniforms. Right. The Seahawks ones they wear in there. The Patriots are terrific. There's
Rams, Kelly.
Rams are so great.
The Eagles, Kelly Green. Rams need their throwback.
They do. The Rams are good.
What are we doing here?
We'll work on that. I said, now that you've moved East Coast, you can't, you're not like a quick trip away from LA to go tell them that. Do they live in LA, the Cronkies?
No. I'm sure he has a home there. I'm sure he has a Malibu home or something, but in Missouri. He's from Missouri.
And he still lives there.
His main compound, I believe, it's cheaper. You know.
That's a good point. Yeah. And he's you know, obviously money is tough for him to come by these days. So
money goes a long way in mid-Missouri as opposed to Malibu.
It does. Did you watch Ozark?
I did. Yeah, great show.
Okay. So you're on board with it. Because I know that people, when they watch a show that might have something to do with like their hometown, right, like they find it to be one of two things. Either like terrible and trash and a poor representation of my region, or you are attached to it because it's familiar to you.
It was definitely, you know, they took liberties.
Yeah.
It's a TV show, but it's the visuals were spot on and the culture is similar, especially for the locals. Like there's lots of money from Kansas City and St. Louis that comes in and builds nice houses there, but it's a rural Missouri place.
No doubt.
Rural Missouri people live there.
Yeah. That was my biggest observation living in Kansas City for a couple of years. I was like, it was not lost on me how landlocked you were. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, except for drive 2 hours to the Ozarks and there you are. You were hanging out with Jason Bateman. Let's talk about these Chargers and Patriots wide receivers here. Let's discuss some injury parts of this. And Keenan Allen mispracticed on Wednesday with a quad injury. I don't know. I just know Keenan Allen. I feel like he's going to give it a go. Yeah. I feel like if Keenan were actually hurt, we would have heard about it like through like a Schefter tweet or something like that prior to yesterday. Maybe I'm wrong. If he plays though, ooh, baby. So good.
To the moon.
Not just because, I mean, he's Keenan freaking Allen. This Patriots secondary is not what it was at the beginning of the season, not what it was in prior years.
It's downright terrible. Like, they're not good.
The whole team is just a disaster right now. You know, I should get them some credit on defense. I saw this stat floating around somewhere. Apparently, they're like the first team in like 30 years to allow 10 or fewer points in back-to-back games and lose both games. 10 exactly. I think it was exactly 10 points in back-to-back games, and they've lost. It's like this never happens. Like, you play that good of defense. Now it's against the Colts and the Giants, a little bit different than the Chargers. But on top of the Patriots defense and Keenan Allen being awesome, there's no one else there. I mean, just crazy disappointment from Quentin Johnston so far for the Chargers, and Mike Williams being hurt. Jalen Guyton's been banged up. Josh Palmer's still on IR. It's just a mess right now. On the Patriots side, DeMario Douglas is in concussion protocol. Pop Douglas has been pretty good for the Patriots on offense. I guess like he and Ramondre are the only players you can say that about for the most part this season. If he plays, do you feel good about Pop Douglas against the Chargers secondary?
I feel okay. I think the Chargers, this is a game where they can flex whatever muscle they have. I think it's not going to be a game where the Patriots are playing a 10-7-13 six type of ball game. They're going to have to score some points and maybe playing from behind. Bailey Zappe, I guess, will be the
Zip
quarterback.
And
he can get the ball to Pop Douglas, who operates in those short and intermediate areas. And let's be honest, this Brandon Staley defense has been gettable all season long. I mean, it's both through the air and on the ground. You can have very viable fantasy performances when the Chargers are the opposing defense. So if Pop Douglas is healthy and available and out there, I think he's a pretty decent start this week.
Here's what I'm curious about for the Chargers this week, and this is sort of a fantasy conversation and sort of like a real-life conversation. They played really well this past Sunday night. I mean, they were in that game. Yeah. They were playing awesome defense for the most part against that really good Ravens offense. Ravens defense gave them a ton of fits, obviously. Mm-hmm. They end up scoring just 10 total points to the Chargers. That might have been their last sort of like real opportunity to stay alive in the AFC playoff picture. They're now 4-7. I mean, you got to catch up to at least one AFC North team, Cleveland and Pittsburgh, both at 7-4, Buffalo 6-6, Houston,
Texans and Broncos,
like you're 4-7 now for LA. You know, when they build that graphic that they see on every network where it's like division leaders, wildcard leaders and in the hunt. I think the Chargers may have fallen off the in the hunt portion of that graphic by now. This is a coach who's come under major scrutiny and a lot of fire. What kind of performance do they bring on Sunday? West Coast team going east, 1 o'clock game. Not exactly the Patriots of old. Right. I'll be curious to see what the Chargers bring to the table on Sunday, just in general.
I think they'll bring a good performance. I think they'll win the game. I think they'll win and cover this game. And I think they're a 4.5, 5-point favorite at the moment. But I don't think it's going to matter ultimately. I think this is a game where they will be able to show that they're better than the Patriots, but as we get later in the schedule and they play teams that are much better than New England, these faults, these issues, the lack of confidence, whatever it is with Brandon Staley, it's going to show.
I just wonder, like, I think what I was getting at is the idea that, like, if they come out sharp on Sunday and, like, as good as they can be in moments offensively, like, when they go toe-to-toe with teams and, like, Herbert throws for 400 yards and Keenan goes off for 150, like, they could wax the Patriots. Problem is we haven't gotten that version of the Chargers nearly consistently enough, which is a big part of the reason why everybody is wondering, is Brandon Staley going to be the coach for the Chargers beyond this season? If Pop Douglas is out, is there a daily fantasy consideration? Devontae Parker, wet your beak at all?
No receivers. I think it just further validates or makes me confident in Ramondre Stevenson.
Yeah.
I think Stevenson's seen 20-plus touches in 2 out of the last 3. I think if there's no Pop Douglas, then 20-plus touches is like the floor for him in this one. A lot of through the air and a lot on the ground.
I will bet Tyler's new mortgage that the Patriots' mindset coming into this game against the Chargers is run the crap out of the ball. Try to keep Justin Herbert.
Agreed.
This is so reductive in terms of analysis, but when you have a new quarterback, almost assuredly, and some, you know, obviously a massively struggling offense, just run the crap out of the ball, try to make it a low scoring game as best you can, and hope that your rushing offense, which is okay, can muscle up against what has been a terrible rush defense for the Chargers for much of this season. Anything else you want to get off your chest here? You can trash on Clay for 10 minutes if you want, right?
We take turns going back and forth about trying to take the high ground.
Yeah.
You know,
you guys are buds.
We are buds. You know, I love you, Mike Clay. But it was great to sit in the seat here. Now that I'm in Connecticut field, I expect to get this invite way more often. Happy to help you guys out any way, shape, or form, because the passions for me are not only the wagering and the gambling, but fantasy football is how I got into wagering and gambling as a youngster. So happy to do this. It was a great time here today, and look forward to being back.
I did get this text from Scott Clark. I make this joke often, but I'm going to keep doing it. It's just a picture of a baseball player named Wally Pipp. Clay is CC'd on this text, so Mike, make of that what you will. You might be done. Great stuff, as always. Seriously, everybody check out ESPN Bet Live if you have not already. Tyler Fulgham. Tyler_Fulgham,
FulGhum. Bet Live, of course, it's ESPN 2, Thursday through Monday, Thursday and Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern, Saturday, 11 a.m. Eastern, Sunday, 9 a.m. Eastern, Monday, 4 p.m. Eastern. So just write that down, get a screenshot.
You know the crew, Tyler, Aaron Dolan, of course, Joe Fortenbaugh, now a local as well.
That's right, he's moving up
here. Joe's got that furry upper lip.
Stanford Steve pops in, Stanford Anita Marks.
Yep, of course. Clay, Dobb, you name it, all part of the family here. Before we go, though, Tyler, one last thing to mention, and this is an important one. It is V Week at ESPN. We partner with the V Foundation to highlight the urgent need for cancer research. This is game-changing research that helps save lives. You can join the fight against cancer by visiting v.org/donate. The best part, I think, is that 100% of your donation goes directly to cancer research. Hopefully you've been enjoying the replay of the Jimmy V speech that aired, I think it was 31 years ago now, at the ESPYs, a speech that gives me chills every single time that we listen to it. Sadly, everybody has been impacted by cancer one way or another, so if you have anything to give, there are very few causes more noble than v.org/donate. All right, great stuff, Tyler. A lot of fun here. We'll see you on Fantasy Football Now on Sunday as well. If you have any questions about where to eat in Connecticut, I will tell you in exchange for one of those breakfast sandwiches that you mentioned. Does it have a name? Like, do you call it something?
It's just the ultimate breakfast sandwich.
The ultimate breakfast sandwich.
It's the best breakfast sandwich in the world.
All right. One of our former colleagues here at ESPN, Jamie Sire, big foodie as well. She had a sandwich named after her at a spot in the Bay Area, and it's called the Sirewich.
I think that's my ultimate goal now.
Have a food named after
have
you.
Have a sandwich named after
sandwich.
Me. Ultimate goal.
Full.
Somewhere like here in the, you know, greater Connecticut, Bristol, Hartford area.
Yeah, I think, the cafeteria might offer that. But you're looking for like an establishment outside of ESPN.
I didn't think about the cafeteria, but maybe that is the best place to have it happen.
I tell you what.
I'm surprised Chris Berman doesn't have a boomer sandwich.
Probably is somewhere. I worked at a deli in college. I went to school here in Connecticut and worked at a deli for a couple of years there. And that place would name a sandwich after everybody. It was great.
Passing them out.
Like, yeah, I mean, it would be like super unique. Like there was a guy who had like a chicken cutlet with like white rice and sour cream. I was like, is it a burrito? I was like, no, I want a sandwich, not a burrito. Hey, his taste, not mine. But he got his name on the board as well. So, I would have thrown like some salsa, some hot sauce, like maybe some jalapenos in there and called it a burrito.
You got a terrible Chop basket and couldn't come up with it.
Right. One day we're going to get you on Chop. Now that you've conquered Guy's Grocery Games, although we need to have,
I want the redemption. I want the redemption, but now that I have, broken the seal at the Food Network and have become a TV food competitor, let's go, baby. All gas, no brakes.
I've noticed your swagger has been a lot greater this year compared to last season. So maybe that's what it is. It's like the Food Network glow up is here for Tyler Foljam. All right, that was a lot of fun. We'll be back tomorrow. I think it's going to be Daniel and I and Mike and Stefania. I'm not entirely sure if I'm being fully transparent. So we hope to see you guys back here tomorrow. Same time, same place. Part 2 of our Week 13 preview. And we'll recap the Cowboys probably taking care of business over the Seattle Seahawks. You're hired.
Yes.
Sorry, Clay.
If you need a stick of Tide, Field is your guy. If you're in Bristol or in Farmington, you should find another ride. Candidly, he hates Mike Clay, and you know that it's a fact. He's on TV every day. A spicy tomato who's got the stats and tweets that'll make you laugh. He's our favorite host and everybody knows his name. He's Fieldy.